Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwendinger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a lovely five-star review and follow us at Serengeti Psych on Twitter.
We're here to talk more about cybersecurity. Each episode will focus on a specific topic or two of interest to the community. And today we're talking about zero trust.
Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
And zero trust is what I have at a convenience store hot dog.
You know, I've had several convenience store hot dogs and I haven't had any issues yet. Now you've got me worried.
Actually, I've never had a convenience store hot dog.
You know, that's probably a wise life choice. Zero trust. David, what is zero trust?
I don't know.
Well, all right, we're done.
So zero trust is the model that assumes breach and verifies requests as though it originated from an open network, regardless of where the request originates from or what resources it's accessing. And it kind of virtually all these definitions are going to be tweaked a little bit depending on who you talk to. And almost everyone says, never trust, always verify.
Yeah. And just coming from that definition perspective, there are a couple definitions. We were talking about this over lunch today. And one of the things that definition doesn't include, I think you said you got that definition from Microsoft.
Yeah.
So the NIST definition is very similar, but it adds that the trust must be continually evaluated, which is something that not everyone does. We'll talk about more of that in a later. I do have, there's a book that I'm reading called Zero Trust Networks, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's a pretty good book. It has some of a summary. It talks about how a zero trust network has five fundamental assertions at the base of it. Number one, network is always assumed to be hostile. Yep, that's in the definition. External and internal threats exist on the network at all times. That again, assumes breach, like we're seeing definitely compliance. Network locality is not sufficient for deciding trust in the network. Hey, look, regardless of where the request originates, we're getting a lot of agreement here. Every device, user, and network flow is authenticated and authorized. So that one's kind of off the Venn diagram here. And then finally, policies must be dynamic and calculated from as many sources of data as possible. And that, I think, is probably the biggest difference between the definition from Microsoft and some of the other ones that I've been looking at, where they have the concept of kind of dynamic trust in users and devices. But we'll dive into that at a little bit later. That's just interesting to me that's what seems to be the difference between some of these zero trust products and models.
I think some try to imply that, though, without actually coming out and saying it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And of course, the zero trust fad started with Forrester and John Kindervag, who wrote a series of zero trust network security reports, which they called the Zero Trust Network Security Report Collect, which was a set of three reports, which they wrote in 2010, beginning with the concept called No More Chewy Centers, Introducing the Zero Trust Model of Information Security. But if you want to read this, you can pay $1,500 for Forrester. So knock yourself out in getting that one. And the second report is Architecture, Building Security into Your Network's DNA, the Zero Trust Network Architecture. And this is also $1,500 from Forrester, but I was able to find it for free on the internet, and there'll be a link in the show notes to it so you can read it for yourself. But it's what, 27 pages, 10 pages of text. The rest of it are network diagrams, which kind of outlines his concept for zero trust architecture. And then the last one is case studies. I'm not definitively sure that this is the one, but I was able to find in Forrester case study, WestJet redefines its security with Forrester's zero trust model. So I'm very certain that's the case study they're talking about, but I'm not positive. And this one you cannot buy from Forrester. Unless you pay for it by having a Forrester account. And then, of course, what followed from this was Google's 2014 paper by Rory Ward and Betsy Bayer, YonCorp, A New Approach to Enterprise Security. And their concept there is really to move all of Google services, and they're apparently doing this. I don't know if they've achieved it or not yet, at least moving towards this idea, where they're going to put all their internal corporate services on the internet and use an access proxy to determine who gets to access it and who doesn't, based on user access management and role assignment and device trust assessment.
And what's interesting here is this actually sounds very similar to when I was searching for Zero Trust. I kept coming up with a couple different products. Companies are putting Zero Trust on all kinds of things. But there's a product called ZTNA, Zero Trust Network Access. And it seems very similar to this, a Google Beyond Core. So a lot of these Zero Trust Network Access tools, they're very focused on getting the user safely and securely to an application somewhere in the cloud. Having looked at one or two of these guys in the past, I happen to remember that one of them, for example, provides no protection on local networks against other systems on the local network. So it's not exactly zero. It's zero trust for the application. It's not zero trust for the So if you're on a hostile network, maybe you signed up or you stuck your laptop on the local coffee hotspot and it's a local hacker hangout and they're all salivating to get their hands on your laptop, the ZTNA product will do nothing to protect you from them on your local network.
Well, I think most people infer or assume that when you're talking about zero trust, what you're talking about is servers should zero trust clients. And that's the extent of it.
But I've seen products where it's extended to everything. For example, there's products that, and I don't know if I would 100% call this zero trust because it doesn't match some of the authentication stuff, but there are products that, you know, manipulate your local firewall and block all incoming connections except for previously authorized connections from what I would assume to be, you know, perhaps your local vulnerability scanning or whatever you've got on your internal corporate. So yeah, I guess that's kind of a flexible case as to whether or not Zero Trust Networking incorporates, you know, external stuff like that for the end user, or if it only really is focused on the services.
Yeah, I think from that perspective, Zero Trust is very much like XDR, unless vendors are going to have their own definitions of what that is. And maybe even organizations who are looking for vendors, and most likely will have their own definitions also. And that's really what's going to come out in their requirements for whatever zero trust thing they want to implement. There's no industry standard for what zero trust means.
Since we're talking about that, I'm actually going to, since we're already kind of talking about products a little bit, vendors a little bit, I've definitely seen some wildly different methods of doing zero trust in vendors. As I mentioned, one example is there's a vendor out there, I'm not going to name any by names, that does the ZTNA product where they're really focused on the end user to the application. There's a product out there that manages local firewalls on the systems. And it's very focused on, you know, lateral movement because it frankly, if you normally, you know, connect up to your Active Directory controller, like it's just whatever, go for it. That port's open, hit it. It doesn't care what you send over the wire. It just cares about kind of that level layer 3 firewall or layer 4 firewall somewhere in there. I've seen some that use endpoint agents that will check and validate that the application that was previously authorized is still the correct application. We talked about this before. It can't be by the hash because if it's been updated, the hash will be completely different, but it does something where it can tell, you know, if a application is close enough, it'll call it an update and it'll permit it to send out. So definitely there's varying levels of, you know, kind of authorization by device, authorization by user, authorization by port, authorization down to the application layer. The application one's super interesting to me simply because since I'm coming from an incident response background, that product gave me a list of every application that was on every system that had that endpoint agent on it. And it would tell me like when those applications changed. It was very interesting, and then it would tell me, you know, when did it block things and why did it block things? And it would give me information about what the application changed to make it be blocked. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's just a different list of what makes that client trusted. You've got the server on one side and you get the client on the other side. What makes up a client is, you know, the device, the application that's being used, the user, and, you know, checking, making different attributes of those three things to say that this client is trusted by checking those three things. And most, I think that application piece that you bring up, that's the first time I've heard of that, but that makes sense because most are just concerned about the user of the device. They aren't really looking at the application that's actually connecting to that server. So I think that's a really good addition, actually, to the the idea there.
And this is where reality differs. Like I said, I've been reading this book on network zero trust, and this is where reality kind of differs from the theoretical. So the theoretical trust model presented by the book, the dynamically generated trust score, it talks about things like how old is the install? When was the last time, you know, your gold image was reinstalled on the system? Which again, for servers may be pretty often, but for end user clients is probably not that often unless you're using VDI or something. Talks about looking at things like, are there network IDS detections from the system? Are there any AV? Is there AV on the system and recent detection? You know, how much do you trust the account? When was the account password last reset? If it was last reset yesterday, that password's pretty fresh. It may not be broken. If the password was reset a year ago, like there's a higher likelihood that it's been compromised. Where are they logging in from? What device browser type are they doing? You know, a lot of kind of UBA stuff kind of built in here. Feeding a dynamic trust score where you can kind of set thresholds for, you can access systems if you're, you know, at a very high, you know, before you touch the crown jewels, you know, you got to be logged in from the same system and the same location, and you've used your two-factor and all this stuff.
Yeah, one thing that's called out in the Beyondcorp paper, which is not listed in the dynamic trust score, which I think is a glaring omission, is the role of the user, or the role of, you know, do they have the role? That even means that they should have be attempting this kind of access.
I think that's assumed. Well, I assumed it. I don't know if
Well, that might be encompassed under account trust, but I don't know, account trust versus, you know, user trust. I'm not sure if those are exactly the same thing.
That's fair. I'm sure that's accounted for in there. I did this list off of memory, so.
Oh, so it's your fault.
It's my fault. It is. If I ever make a mistake, it's 100% my fault. That's what my wife says, at least.
You never make a mistake because someone else's fault.
So anyways, but this is, like I said, this is where the theoretical and the reality have really diverged. Most zero trust products I've seen do not do a dynamic trust score. I was looking over a list of 10 vendors, and I'll stick this article in there, but I think only one or two of the vendors specifically called out that they will dynamically chain what a user's allocations are. An awful lot of these seem to do it kind of in the fossil dinosaur trapped in amber method, where they go in monitor mode for a month or so, and then they just sort of freeze the current network configuration as the zero trust.
To a previous state.
Yeah.
It's really a state change is what it's looking for. And I mean, that might be the same thing as the dynamic trust. It's like, what is the comparison?
Well, the thing is with a lot of these though, when you do that state, when somebody would reach out to something new, it would just automatically block it. It wouldn't consider, because what you could do is you could set it up so that if they reach out to the crown jewels, yeah, if something changed, maybe they block it. But if they reach out to like an internal website or something that's not on the sensitive document, like the intranet site, and they just didn't happen to go to the intranet site for 30 days, and it's listed as kind of a low trust accessible site. I see what you're saying but it's just not dynamic the way that they have it set it up. But the dynamism is always seems to be manual.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I guess the thing would be that you could have a dynamic trust score on one side, and what I would call risk score is probably a bad term, but something on the server side that indicates the level of sensitivity, if you will.
Yeah.
And say, okay, a user with a trust score of X, which is dynamically identified, can access resources at this level on this side based on their role or something like that.
Yeah. Threshold. Yeah, that makes sense.
Or you just say the role is what determines what on this X on the side you can access, and then the dynamic trust score just determines whether that access is authorized at that time or not.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of them incorporate machine learning into this, especially in terms of trying to figure out the assessments and what's, you know, there's some stuff in every network that's going to be pretty obvious, like, you know, 389 and 636 to the Active Directory controllers, you know, various management ports and SSH and RDP from jump boxes and stuff like that. So I would assume they almost have to use machine learning going forward, because they can't. I think it would fall apart pretty quickly in a large network if you're relying on manual for every new connection.
Yeah, either machine learning or, you know, rules that account for nuance versus very stringent A, B, black, white kind of decision.
Yeah, because like going out to a new server on port 80 is probably a lot less of a risk than going over like RDP or SSH.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, if that ties into what the user role is versus, you know, an accountant, you know, versus a network engineer.
Right. Yeah. Because the system administrator RDP makes sense versus an accountant. RDP does not make sense.
And it seems to be that this is quite a deviation from the original paper, which was really about network architecture and segmentation. And then it kind of morphed by the time I got to Google, and then the Google paper is really what everybody's kind of using as the baseline for their zero trust concepts now.
Yeah. Although again, at least one vendor, it sounds like that one vendor that really focuses on just like firewalls does seem like they're more focused on the network architecture. They're just doing it on the endpoint rather than, you know, building out switches and firewalls.
Right. So they're going with the classic definition.
Yeah. Which is funny because it's only
a classic versus,
you know. versus new Coke.
Yeah. Versus new zero trust.
It's funny. Until you told me about that Forrester paper today, I actually, in my mind, this vendor, I was like, this isn't zero trust. This is nothing like this is, they're not doing zero trust. And now I see that the actual difference is that they are doing zero trust. They're just doing the classic zero trust.
Well, it's a good thing we talked about this before you got on the phone and said, you guys are not zero trust.
But I did. I got on the phone with them and I would ask them about like trust scoring and dynamic trust scoring and stuff like that, because I hadn't seen it in any other presentations, and not a single vendor that I talked to was like, oh, we don't do that.
Yeah, in the original paper, it's really high. It goes into the network architecture piece. It talks about how the old three-layer architecture of, you know, a core, a distribution layer, and an access layer needs to be thrown out the window entirely. And leveraging VLANs for segmentation is a terrible idea, and it's too dangerous to be trusted. And kind of goes to the idea of you need to redesign network entirely, and kind of, at least based on kind of the way that I was reading this, was you need next-gen firewalls and something like a Cisco UCS, Unified Computing Services or system, to re-envision the way that the network functions. And when I say next-gen firewall, I'm thinking about a firewall that has all the different network security tools built into it already, you know, proxy, IDS, IPS, et cetera, within that one device.
And then
using those devices in order to ensure that traffic only goes where it is designed to go or is authorized to go.
That sounds
to go anywhere.
That sounds a lot more complicated than kind of the agent-based stuff I've seen, which I imagine is probably why everybody's doing agent-based instead now.
Yeah, it sounds complicated, and I don't dispute that, but if you look at the diagrams within the paper, they're real simple. It's like, oh, here's five boxes and here's the line between them.
Yeah. So no, this is super easy if you've only got 20 systems.
Yeah. So I think the paper makes it, if you read the paper, the text sounds very complex. If you look at the diagrams, it seems like it's, you know, no brainer, real simple. So don't just go on the diagrams based on what's the paper about, how the difficulty of implementing what Forrester originally called as zero trust. And I think it makes most sense to actually have a combination of network and endpoint together to do this. But to do it, and you're going to have to do something that virtually, you know, no organization I've been at has done successfully, or is finished doing. They always seem to be in the process of doing. And that's proper role assignment, identification, and access based on that. Because I know one of our organizations I was working at had 2,500 employees, but actually identified that they had 1,500 roles. So almost everybody had a unique role. And if you're going to do access based on that, that's a lot of work to get done.
Oh boy. Yeah, I know. I agree about the, and then part of it too has to do with your OT stuff and your IoT stuff, where you don't have any method of installing an endpoint agent on there. So you can't just ignore this.
Well, you're going to have to heavily rely on the network in that case, obviously.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we will definitely include some links in the show notes for if you want to read up on zero trust networks, even if after our expert analysis, you're still not quite there yet.
Yeah, I definitely recommend you read through the Forrester paper. It's 27 pages, but really only 10 pages of text, the rest of the diagrams. And then the Google paper, which is only 6 pages, is those are very good kind of foundational documents to kind of get your mind set and give you a foundation for what that concept is and as it's presented. So when you start thinking about what your requirements are or that your company wants to move to zero trust, what does that mean? What's your definition of zero trust? And then find vendors who can help facilitate your movement towards that architecture and that concept.
Yeah, definitely worth keeping out for like which version of zero trust is best for your environment. And lest anybody think that I'm an easier master than David, I'm going to assign the NIST special publication 800-207, which is 59 pages. And I'm going to need a report on the changes in zero trust over the last 10 years.
In chronological order.
In chronological order.
10 pages, double space.
Double space. And don't give me this 10-inch margin BS.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Secure Serengeti podcast. Follow us on Twitter @SerengetiSec and download and listen to us on your favorite podcast app.